From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I'm from Walnut Creek and also from Thailand.
El Cerrito.
From Oakland.
From Albany, California.
Coming up, we go out on the town for some dinner and a show. But there's one catch. It's all in the dark.
I think what it does is it interrupts people's habitual patterns. Suddenly they're not thinking about the future or the past anymore. They're suddenly like in the present.
Walking in the shoes of the blind. Then filmmaker Sam Green goes deep into the fog.
I like fog because it's a lens through which to see the city. It's a lens through which to paint a portrait of the city.
And we use this week's audiograph mystery sound to help us find our way.
When you can't see anything, you can tell what direction they're coming from pretty clearly.
Just close your eyes and listen today on Cross Currents. It's Thursday night. The weekend's almost here. Time to relax. Maybe you'll meet up with your friends, grab some dinner. Now imagine you walk into a restaurant and it's dark, pitch dark. You can't see the tables. You can't see your dinner companions. You can't see the food. It's not a power outage. This is darkness by design. Welcome to Blind Cafe.
Just follow and hold on to the person in front of you.
Okay.
So, hang on to the person in front of you. Hang on to the first person in front of you.
The brainchild of Brian Rochelot, who goes by just Rosh, Blind Cafe is an event that pops up in restaurants across the U.S. It includes dinner, a live concert, and a discussion about what it's like to live without sight. And all of the waitstaff is blind. Recently, I went to try out Blind Cafe in San Francisco. About 50 people are waiting in a lounge in the basement of a building in San Francisco's Fillmore District. Heather Gadineau and her friends came over from Oakland.
We thought it would be really interesting to be able to dine in the dark and be kind of devoid of all senses and see what that experience was like.
Are you table one? Because they're calling you.
Table one, yes.
You're table one?
Yes.
All right. See you inside.
Thank you.
Heather and her friends seem pretty relaxed, excited. I don't know how to feel, to be honest. I'm a bit worried about the dark. Getting elbowed in the eye or spilling water on the ground and someone slipping on it. Or just being scared. Organizer Rosh says these concerns are part of the deal.
I think what it does is it interrupts people's habitual patterns. Suddenly they're not thinking about the future or the past anymore. They're suddenly like in the present. And you have to relearn how to relate with your world in the dark.
Rosh says it's supposed to be empowering. Okay. It's my turn to go in.
So what do I do?
What's that?
What do I do?
Just follow and hold on to the person in front of you.
Okay.
So, hang on to the person in front of you.
They walk us in a line, slowly into a dark tunnel. It twists and darkens the further you go. As we get to the end of the tunnel, it's pitch black, and I start to panic a bit.
Whoa, okay, total dark. Okay. Lots of people. I can't see a thing. I can't see the person in front of me. I can't see this recorder.
So, seats you right here, ma'am.
This is my chair. Okay, let me feel it. Oh, there it is. That's my chair.
Okay.
Now it's chow time. I hear people clamoring to find their food and water.
So I am going to venture into the food. I can't. Okay, I have to feel my way. All the utensils are compostable so people don't get stabbed with forks or knives. Here's something. What's this? It feels like bread. Let me see. Oh, this is like some toast. I'm going to just try it out. Here we go. Pesto. Oh, this is a. There's olives in here. Tastes good.
Trying to eat in the dark is not an easy task. I feel my senses of touch and smell heightening. I touch something small and round, like a potato, but I'm not sure. So I end up doing what I tell my kids never to do.
Can't believe I have to smell to find out what it is. Okay, it smells like. Smells like potatoes. Let me taste. Oh, eggplant, I think.
People are enjoying themselves, laughing and chatting, their hands bumping into each other, trying to find their water bottles, stealing each other's quiche. The chef finally tells us what we've been eating.
Okay, kale, rainbow kale salad. Brown rice. Squash. Oh, I was wrong. I thought it was eggplant. I just dipped my hand in something liquidy. Let me smell it. Oh, olive oil. I dipped my hand in olive oil.
Our waiter for today is Rick Hammond. He's blind and invites anyone to ask him anything about living with blindness.
Any questions about blindness, feel free to raise your hands or
He asks people to shout out their names to be called on. They ask questions about work, about how he uses computers and cell phones. A woman asks him about his biggest challenge.
I guess my biggest challenge in relation to blindness is the public perception of, you know, a blind person can't do this or can't do that.
After a candid talk with Rick, I start to feel like it's been way too long in the dark. We're in our second hour now, and I'm starting to feel restless. I understand why one woman just can't handle it any longer and asks to be led back out. It's not just the dark. It's the loneliness you feel, despite being in a loud room full of people. You miss your loved ones. You feel abandoned, vulnerable. Not seeing for that long, being in a state where it's the same whether you close your eyes or open them, creates this sense of loss. Your mind is searching for something it can't find, a connection. So when event founder Rosh and his band take to the stage, it's a welcome distraction. The music is calming, and in the spirit of sharing, we sing together. Then someone gives Rosh a lighter and... It's so good to see again. As my eyes adjust to the dim light, I see my table is a mess, and it makes me think about those who still can't see despite the light, about our blind waiter, Rick Hammond, and his world.
My hope is that it'll open the door for people to be less scared to explore that world of disabilities and less scared to approach people with a disability or to treat them as equals, and that they feel that they can be open with people and maybe a little bit more open with themselves.
As we emerge into the lounge we started off in, everyone is visibly relieved. As for me, I feel small and humbled. Losing one sense had me so uneasy. But on the other hand, through patience and calm, my mind eventually accepted the dark, and it was okay. We're built to be able to adjust. So I guess Rosh is right. Realizing that is empowering. That piece was co-produced by Laura Flynn. So, want to try it? There are three more Blind Cafe events in San Francisco before the end of the year. One is tonight. We'll show you how to get tickets at kalw.org. Click on Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. The San Francisco Bay Area is famous for something that affects everyone's visibility, fog. It's ubiquitous. It's mysterious. And documentarian Sam Green and cinematographer Andy Black have created a film that explores exactly what it means. A cinematic study of fog was commissioned by the Exploratorium, and you can see it beginning this weekend at the Oakland Museum of California. KALW's Ben Trefney spoke with Sam Green about what inspired him to create a work of art around a San Francisco icon.
I've always loved the visual splendor of fog, but to me there's a lot more to it than that. Fog is very emotionally evocative. Right before we started shooting, I lost somebody really close to me. I had a terrible loss and was just in a very deep state of grief. And so we drove around for many weeks just looking for fog. We'd just drive all day around town. And somehow that was the best thing I could have done, because we just kind of talked. There was nothing else I had to do. And somehow also that in the fog I saw a lot in terms of kind of emotion and feelings and ideas about the world. And so some of the interviews I did with people reflect that.
So let's hear now a clip from your video work on display right now at the Oakland Museum of California, A Cinematic Study of Fog.
Harold Gilliam was a Chronicle reporter for a million years and literally wrote the book on San Francisco weather. Harold's one of those old people who can't sleep, and when he talked about being up really late at night and hearing the foghorns, it got me.
I hope they never take off the foghorns. They provide a sense of people who are asleep or half asleep or somehow staying up at night, giving them the sense of the bay, that there are ships out there in the bay, that the ocean is rolling out there, and that the earth is turning. It's a deep feeling that's hard to explain.
So it seems like in exploring fog and telling the story of fog, it was really something of a story of yourself or humanity in its interaction with fog and what fog brings out of people.
In a way, it's not a story in terms of a beginning, middle, and end kind of narrative, but it's a kind of inquiry or meditation on. And I like fog because it's a lens through which to see the city. It's a lens through which to paint a portrait of the city. In the film, we interviewed a lot of different people. You know, we have like this big burly bear guy at Castro and Market talking about the fog, and he has great things to say about it.
I think there's something quite sinister about it, because it's quite John Carpenter, isn't it? And it's quite kind of just the way it just engulfs people's houses and then disappears.
And then there's the guy who turns on the foghorns on and off at the Golden Gate Bridge, and he's like this kind of very funny, salty electrician.
I think people like the foghorns, generally. Sometimes we get complaints if we leave them on too long. If the fog goes away, sometimes we get phone calls from people, you know, down on the marina that say, "Hey, it's clear out. What do you got your foghorns on for?"
And then there's old people in the marina who are out walking, a wonderful old woman with white gloves. And so in a way, it sort of reaches everybody, and it's this great unifier of the city, or at least a unifier in terms of everybody experiences it. So I loved it as a way to paint a portrait of the city in an indirect way. By looking at fog, you're really looking at San Francisco, because it's an integral part of the city's identity.
That's filmmaker and storyteller Sam Green. And that's really interesting at a time when a lot of the city is talking about splitting apart in different ways or coming apart and what the identity really is of San Francisco. It's interesting for you to mention something that brings everybody together, the weather, this consistency.
Yeah, and it's funny because the weather is the quintessential boring topic to talk about, but it's one of those things, the more attention you pay to it, the more fascinating it is and the more rich it is. I mean, one of the things I've always liked about making documentary films is by looking very closely at something, you never see it the same way afterwards. And with fog and weather, the more I paid attention to it, the more I saw in it and the more richness there is. So the project changed me because I'm now a huge lover of fog and lover of weather in San Francisco.
So Sam, tell me about one of your favorite places in San Francisco to film fog.
We shot a lot on Twin Peaks. And one of the great things, you know, as a San Franciscan, you don't often go to Twin Peaks, but hanging out there in summer, tourist buses come every 5 minutes and drop off usually a busload of tourists, European tourists, all wearing shorts and t-shirts, and they get out and it's freezing and it's foggy, they can't see anything. So we shot many interviews up there and it just never ceased to be funny. And there's a great moment, it's in the film, of this guy wearing a Yale t-shirt and kind of like plaid golf shorts up there just shivering. And it just, you know, you can't not laugh at that as a San Franciscan.
So in making this cinematic exploration, Sam, what do you think you came away with? What did you learn?
I interviewed this guy, Nick Dorsky, who's a experimental filmmaker. He lives in the Avenues, and he makes films by walking around the city a lot. And so I figured he would have thoughts about fog. And he said something great that I've always loved, which is fog is like depression. If you're inside of it, it seems terrible, and it seems like you'll never get out of it. And it sucks. But when you're outside of it, looking at it at a distance, it's romantic and glamorous and beautiful. And fog is kind of the same way in a way. When it's just hanging there and it's August and it has been there for a long time, and it's almost like smog at that point. You know, it's just gray. It sucks. But when you're in the mission and it's sunny and you're watching it come over Twin Peaks and it's this white, beautiful looking thing, that's fantastic. Fog is deep.
That's Academy Award-nominated filmmaker Sam Green. He spoke with KALW's Ben Trefney. A cinematic study of fog opens Saturday at the Oakland Museum of California and runs through June. Find more information at KALW.org. Click Crosscurrents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. All week long on KALW, we've been playing you a sound very familiar to many of the people we heard from in that last interview, including a certain
kind of very funny, salty electrician.
Asked you to tell us what that was and where we recorded it. KALW's Ryan Miller and Julie Kane bring us the story.
Electric Choctaw Bridge personnel, we're going to energize our foghorns for a test. Please phone in if you're near the foghorns and you do not want me to energize them. My name is Jim McKnight. I'm the chief electrician on the Golden Gate Bridge. And one of our really cool jobs is to be able to operate the foghorns. Okay, so we're going to run a test right here. And the first one you're going to hear is the low one, I believe, because it'll come on for 2 seconds. And the next one you'll hear.
And what's the science of being able to tell when you need to turn it on?
We go out and we see if it's foggy, and if it's foggy, we come back in and turn them on.
So who's listening to those? What are those for?
Mainly for our enjoyment. No, I'm kidding. It's mainly for the ships that are passing underneath the bridge, fishing boats, any maritime activity underneath the bridge. So it lets them know where they are in the channel, and they can guide in a thick fog. They can guide if they don't, the smaller boats, if they don't have radar, it lets them know whether they're close or far, or if they're in between, you know, if they can hear the mid-span horns as loud as the one on the pier, then they know they're somewhere in the middle there. They're not going to run into the bridge. And that's what they're for, so people don't run into the bridge.
My name's David McCloy. I'm a San Francisco bar pilot. And bar pilots are, we're mariners that get on ships here locally and navigate them in and out of the port, anywhere from 12 miles offshore outside the Golden Gate to all the way everywhere in the bay, including Stockton and Sacramento.
See, there it is right there. See those horns on the base of the bridge structure there?
And so where are they? What sound comes from what?
Well, there's the South Tower, which has one horn, a deep, rich, long blast. And then there's the center span, which has a whistle. It's a higher pitched sound, and it's two blasts. So they're very distinctly different, and you can pick them out instantly. There's something reassuring about being able to hear those horns where they're supposed to be. And surprisingly, you can, when you can't see anything, you can tell what direction they're coming from pretty clearly.
Well, a lot of you recognize the sound of those foghorns. We even got a call from a listener in Minnesota who knew what they were. But we can only have one winner, and this week it's Greg Corrett.
Morning. I was just calling about the sound recorded in the Bay Area. Wasn't that latest playback the foghorns on the Golden Gate Bridge? Because I know they have the mid-span horns, and then they have South Tower horns. And there were two different horns that were in succession. That's my guess.
Wow. Greg told us he knew precisely what that sound was because he happens to work for Lighthouse for the Blind in San Francisco, and they use the sound of those foghorns in their podcast.
The following broadcast was produced by the Lighthouse for the Blind in San Francisco as part of our Lighthouse Learning Library.
Congratulations, Greg. We're sending you a KALW t-shirt. And a special hello to Dave McCloy, the bar pilot we just met. He's piloting a ship up the river to Stockton today. Ahoy, Dave! For the rest of you, we'll have a new sound next week. Here's your sneak peek.
I mean, this is a great day in the store. I've got a 53. I've got two 53s, a 56, a 59, 59 Bay, 53 Bay, World's Fairs, Texas, 19th century politics. Texas is unmarked, but I know it's a Texas drawer. If you open it, it's got some really good Texas in it. I love it. So anyway.
Okay, if you think you know who that is and where we recorded him, give us a call at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106, and you may be next week's winner of a KALW t-shirt. And you can tell us where we should record next. We love hearing from you. And go to KALW.org to hear more from Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. That's it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Julie Kane, Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Laura Flynn, Nina Gensler-Debs, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, Christina Loring, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Ryan Miller, Stephen Short, and Todd Whitney. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Martina Castro is our senior producer. Our executive editor is Ben Trefney. Holly Kernan is our news director. You're listening to the Diablo Valley College Rock, Rhythm, and Blues Review. They're playing next Sunday at the century-old Empress Theater in Vallejo, starting at 2 o'clock. You can find all the information at klw.org. Click Cross Currents. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba. When I saw you and heard talking, I saw you and that girl walk.